You're tuned to Deadly Choices Radio with your host, Sinead Clements.
Yes, that's right, you mob. You're listening to Deadly Choices Radio on 98.9 FM for the best country. And I'm Sinead Clements. I'm a proud Kalkadoon Birra and Jitterbal woman from far north Queensland. Before I go ahead, I'd like to acknowledge and pay my respects to the traditional custodians of the land that we're broadcasting from today here in Meanjin. So welcome. The Deadly Choices Show, our weekly show dedicated towards mob making deadly choices. Remember, making a deadly choice is all about eating healthy, remaining active in both body, mind and spirit, ensuring you keep up to date with your 715 health checks, resisting any temptation to take up smoking, or, you know, taking the right steps to quit smoking for you and your family. So in the studio today, we're joined by one of our OTs, Nat, as well as an Olympian and Deadly Choices Ambassador, Brandon Wakeling. Later, we'll also be joined by Dr. Jonathan. He's going to give us a bit of a rundown on the COVID-19 situation and where we're at with that. But yeah, it should be a good one in honour of OT week. Nat, how are you going?
Good, thanks, Sinead. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. And before we go ahead, who's your mob and where are you from?
Yeah, so my mob are from far north Queensland as well. So I'm a proud Cookie Yalanji woman, and I grew up in a small town called Innisfail, and I've been living here in Brisbane for the past 4.5 years and have worked at the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health as an occupational therapist for the same amount of time.
Deadly. Now, what made you want to get into occupational therapy?
Yeah, so my journey into OT started when I was in high school and I wasn't too sure what I wanted to do. So I ended up doing a work experience at our local hospital. And I originally thought that I wanted to be a physio. But unfortunately at the time, the physio wasn't available at the hospital for me to do my work placement with. So the only choice that I had was to go with the occupational therapist and I knew nothing about OT. Yeah, spending a week there was amazing and really kind of changed my career path.
1 week, hey, of work experience just changed the whole landscape of where you were going.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the physio ended up coming back towards the end of the week and said, you know, do you want to come and spend some time with me? And I thought, no, I'm set.
Meant to be.
I know what I want to do now.
Yeah. And we're also joined by Brandon Wakeling. Brandon, how are you going?
Yeah, not too bad at all.
Not
thanks for having
bad.
Me back.
Yeah. So your mob, where you're from and how long and what you do within our organisation?
Yeah, so Wanneroo man in the Hunter region of New South Wales. I myself was born in the Western Sydney suburbs of Campbelltown. Mum and Dad moved up here with me to the Gold Coast at a very young age, just before starting primary school. So Gold Coast is essentially what I've called home since then. DC ambassador and Olympic weightlifter. So I was at the Tokyo Olympics this year. Back into the swing of things now that I'm back home, which is good.
Yeah. And you also work in our marketing team. And, you know, while we're on the fact of topic of choosing our careers, tell me how you got into studying marketing as well.
Yeah, well, as we were talking about off air, we probably should have waited till on air,
right?
But yeah, I went to Griffith University. It's kind of like weightlifting. It was just by chance, really. So I had a plan of going to university and studying engineering. So I had joined business for the first term that I was going to do while doing a math bridging course, but I ended up really enjoying the marketing side of things in business, and then I just stayed in that and then have just followed that path ever since then.
Yeah, I love that. Now, Nat, tell me a bit about what OT do. You know, it's very in line with physiotherapy and some people really don't understand a day in the life of, you know, an occupational therapist.
Yeah, that's a question we get asked all the time. So I'm pretty used to explaining what we do and I don't get offended. So I guess occupational therapy, we're an allied health profession and we do work alongside physios and other allied health professionals. But really our role is to support mob who might have a disability or they might have an impairment, an injury, an illness or a chronic disease, help them with their daily activities and to support them to be able to do the things that they want and need to do every day.
Yeah, so I mean, that seems like it's quite important in the sense of you're really just dealing with helping people just live and just get their day-to-day tasks done. A lot of my clinicians and guests who come on, I think we had Celia the other week, which, you know, she definitely plugs optometry. So, you know, she's trying to convince the young ones to take a career up in optometry. But, you know, tell me, for somebody who may want to take a career up in OT, you know, what's the best part about your job?
I think for me, I love that every day is really different. And so I think that keeps things really interesting for me. And I get to work with people from all walks of life, all ages. And I think also being able to help people do the things that are most important and meaningful to them gives me a lot of satisfaction in my job, knowing that I'm helping them to be, the best person they can be, and also to make sure that they can participate in everyday life just like everyone else.
Absolutely. Now, the theme this year, what's the theme kind of raising awareness for the OT week?
Yeah, so our theme this year is participation, independence and inclusion. And I think OT Week is all about celebrating our profession and the deadly work that our OTs do out in the community, and also just raising awareness for, what our profession is, because, some people aren't aware of how we work and what we can do. This year, I guess, the themes are kind of centered around participation, so supporting people to be able to participate in their daily activities. And I think that looks really different for people due to COVID.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to still let Mob know that we're around and we can help.
Absolutely.
Despite the COVID pandemic, and often we have to do things differently. And life looks a bit different because of the pandemic. And so sometimes that might mean there's changes to our daily routines.
Look, I find it interesting where, you know, all those things, participation, inclusion and independence, they're necessities. They're like, they're human rights for all of us. And, you know, our abilities to do things are different, change. So it feels like we really need to cater to so many people, so many different people, but still nonetheless important. What are some of the things that you help your clients out with? I know, you know, I've heard about kind of people having issues around their wrists, and their favorite thing to do is, you know, whippersnip, or, you know, that's their favorite yard work, and they're having troubles with their body doing their favorite tasks that they love to do, you know, maintaining their backyard or things like that. But what are some of the situations, I guess, that you come across? Because, and I ask this because how do you know you need an OT if you don't know what OTs do, right? So, you know, tell me some of the stuff that you got to help people, you know, participate in these days.
So I guess for me, I at the moment only work with adults and older adults, so from 18 years and older. And so I guess, you know, the clients that come through the clinic are often referred by their doctor. And so it's identified, you know, after a health check, what a client might be having difficulties with. And then for us as OTs, we like to take what's called a top-down approach. So we sit down and have a yarn with our clients and find out what's really happening in their lives, and take them they take us through what a day in the life looks like for them. And then from there, we can kind of start to understand, you know, what are their challenges and what are their difficulties, and what specifically do they want to be able to do more independently, or what do they want to participate in with some help. And so looking at it from what we call an occupational lens. Mm-hmm. So specifically focusing on those activities and tasks that client's having trouble with, and then we can work out how to help them from there, and use a range of intervention kind of approaches that suit that person and their needs.
Yeah, deadly. Now, for those who are just tuned in, this is 98.9 FM for the best country, and this is the Deadly Choices radio show. I'm here joined by one of our occupational therapists in honour of OT Week here, Nat. And I've had a good yarn here just about, you know, what OT is all about, and what we guys, what you know, we do and what you guys do as a service as well too. So thank you very much for coming in. And as well as, you know, you talked about, Nat, the changing since COVID. So tell me what that looks like for your service, you know, as even talking about like telehealth and things like that.
Yeah, so I think we've been quite fortunate in Queensland to, you know, we've survived lockdowns and, and stayed out of lockdowns as well for the most part. But we're still offering telehealth, so whether that's a video or a phone consult, particularly if there is a lockdown and some of our clinic services are closed or they're not running, we can still offer that service via telehealth to make sure that, you know, mob are staying connected and still getting access to their health services. Or even if that's just preferred, you know, we're more than happy to make that option available in the current climate as well. But for the most part, you know, we can still get out and do home visiting for those essential reasons as well.
And, you know, is a lot of the kind of things you deal with physical in a sense? And I guess what makes, what do you guys do different to someone like a physiotherapist?
Yeah, so, yeah, for some clients, it might be their physical health that we need to support. So the difference between us and physio, I guess physio is probably more so focused on more biomechanical motor skills, mobility components of physical health. Whereas for us, we do take that into consideration. We have awareness of those sorts of treatment options, but we are more so focused on what aspect of that person's health is impacting on their day-to-day activities. So we look at it in a much more functional way, and specifically work on, you know, components of that activity that someone might be having difficulties with, and maybe show them a different way to do the activity or give them a piece of equipment or a assistive device to help them do that easier. So we do think about the physical components as well, but where a physio would... that would be their primary kind of treatment approach.
They'd be trying to build, I guess, you know, muscle and improve that. Yeah, right.
Yep.
And you guys are just helping them kind of get through it and make that, I guess, a task during the day which doesn't, you know, affect negatively affect their health.
Yep.
Okay, well, there you go, you mob. If you're in need of an OT, you definitely can go through your local AMS and mention it to your doctor and you'll get referred. But thank you so much, Nat, for coming on and having a yarn today. It's always interesting to make sure we know that I never know what OTs do, and I always talk to you guys, but it's once we get there and once we eventually get to that age potentially where we do need OT, it's going to be important for all of us to understand what service we have available even.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely have a yarn to your doctor if you're not sure whether you need an OT for yourself or a family member, and they should be able to kind of put you in the right direction and let you know, where you can see one of us.
There you go, you mob. If you need an OT, make sure you have a look at, you know, what the services around you provide, and I'm definitely sure we'll be in there and give a call and get that thing sorted. But I find it's funny, like it feels like it's an issue that people can prolong for a while and then they're like, no, I've got to deal with this.
Yeah.
And that's when our OT mob step in and it, you know, essentially changes the person you're working with life, because now that they can, you know, change something for the rest of their life, they can do it without an ease. And yeah, it's really good to see mob just enjoying life a little bit more with those little changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes it's not until you really struggle with something or you can't do something that you realize the value of doing that particular activity and how that fits within your day-to-day life. So but also important to think of those things early, or if it's starting to become an issue, you know, getting on top of that and getting in to see a doctor, and we can definitely help out at any kind of life stage.
Yeah, deadly.
Hi, it's Petro Sivanasivi here, Deadly Choice Ambassador, and you're listening to DC Radio on 98.9 FM.
Well, welcome back, you mob. It's a Wednesday night here in Meanjin, and I am joined by, now, Brandon Wakeling. Brandon, how you going?
I'm good.
That's good. Now, you know, things have settled down a bit since the Olympics, since Tokyo. How do you feel now, you know, heading into Christmas? You've had a bit of a break and you're seeing what training looks like in the future. What does that look like for you?
It's been really good. Post-Olympics, I actually had roughly 2 months off training. So I've never taken 2 months off
anything,
anything before. So I think my body needed it. Obviously, yeah. The lead up to the Olympics was pretty crazy. My first qualifying event was 2018, so it had been pretty full on ever since then. So my body was definitely needing a bit of a rest. So now that I've done that, I've started to pick up some more momentum again. So back into training now, slowly starting to build up. All leading into Birmingham next year for the Commonwealth Games. So
wow, when's Commonwealth Games next year?
It'll be July, August next year. So yeah, exactly a year after the Olympics. So
wow, that's going to be exciting. It's you know, we've had the Olympics announced that eventually it'll be in Brisbane, and I don't know, a decade away. It's a while away, but we have something coming up with Com Games. So what does preparing for Com Games look like? Do you know, do you have your kind of where you want to be at certain stages leading up, or you just kind of find your way through it?
So me and my coach segment my training. We make 12-week blocks roughly for training. So we start from a lot of reps to begin with, and then as the weeks go on, the reps obviously lessen, and then the amount of weightlifted goes up until we peak at that 12-week mark, and then I'll have a week or two rest, and then I'll start again. So we'll do the math on when the Commonwealth Games is, just to make sure that I'm going to be peaking at the right time, because you can only peak a few times a year.
Yeah.
Leading into the Olympics, I had to peak, you know, 6 times in some years, and my body wasn't too happy with it. So hoping to do the math right on this one, just have the Com Games this time to focus on. So it'd be good for my body overall, I think.
Hey, I think peaking a couple of times a year, I always tell my brother he peaked in high school. So peaking a couple of times a year is awesome. I'm still waiting for my peak to come through, I think. But, you know, definitely with our training, you guys train so hard. There's something about squatting that, or even that, you know, just the squat movement, that I always feel like when I'm squatting, I'm also, you know, I'm walking around like a games character, a PlayStation character, because you know how they just walk around so staunch and stiff. I feel like that because I just genuinely feel stronger. It's a weird feeling just from your core, which you don't always expect. But yeah, there's something about weightlifting that I think definitely as women too, like you feel so strong in your hips and your body. So I definitely love it. So, but what, you know, what is your favorite part about weightlifting?
I just love the process of training. So before weightlifting, I didn't start weightlifting until I was 21. I had no idea what it was. I played rugby league and went to the gym. So I love the gym ever since I joined it. Even before that, when I was like 5, 6 years old, I used to do push-ups and sit-ups every day. I enjoyed that slow progression and then building momentum that way. So
it chose you. The sport chose you.
It kind of did, yeah. It was kind of making a living off working out. I didn't see a way forward when I was, you know, younger at the gym. I had no idea what weightlifting was, and it just kind of found me in a way.
What athlete likes training more than they actually like, you know, the actual part of the sport? Like, so many people, you know, I was listening to Mike Tyson not long ago. He's like, you got to love the things you hate about your sport, which is the training, you know. And I hate running, but I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to pretend and try and convince myself that I love it. So it's funny how you love the training part more than the playing part. But, you know, playing rugby league, as you know, myself, I played rugby league, but I love kind of getting it wrong in the training paddock 100 times, and then you go to the actual field and you don't get no redos or, you know, no resets. It's the real game and you get it right, or, you know, on the actual field, and you're like, yeah, that was what all the training was for. You know, it's just a big pat on the back after that, after just butting heads all the time in training, and then coming through and getting it. But yeah, I just can't imagine that kind of feeling, like, you know, not making the weight. But then, has that ever been like a situation for you?
Yeah. So in weightlifting, we obviously do snatch, clean and jerk. You get 3 snatches, 3 clean and jerks in competition. You add the best of each one. Leading up to competition, depending on what weight you hit in training, that's when you kind of select what you want to do in competition. And, you know, hitting a snatch is a lot harder than, you know, just picking up a weight off the ground like a deadlift. It's very easy to miss. So, for instance, at the Commonwealth Games, my first attempt of the snatch was 120, and I only hit that in training maybe twice before that. Missed it. I cannot even count how many times I'd missed it. So
what's a comfortable amount of snatch? Like, say you feel comfortable because you've done it X amount of times in training. What's the amount of times that makes you feel comfortable that you can walk into competition and be like, yeah, I know what to do here?
None. No matter what. If I hit every single weight in training, it's weird when you're in competition because there's no room for error.
Yeah, right.
The circumstances are different, especially, Commonwealth Games, Olympics, cameras front everywhere, stage, lights big everywhere. Lights. Big, well, for instance, Gold Coast Commonwealth Games, massive crowd. We had like 5,000 people. So it adds a layer of intensity. So they had the big heartbeat monitor going boom, 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 boom as you were going to the platform. For everyone here to try to, build it up a bit.
Yeah, right.
So when your first attempt is at a weight that you've missed more than you made, if you miss all three of those lifts, you're out. You don't get to do clean and jerks because you have to do one snatch, one clean and jerk to make a total. So the stakes are high, and at those events, people will push their limits and just have a crack at something that's quite heavy.
Yeah.
But it does feel good when it does go right. I've had training cycles where it just wasn't gelling.
Yeah.
For instance, like leading up to the Olympics, because I had a lot of injuries that had impeded my lead up. So I didn't hit any PB weights, but I hit weights at the Olympics that I hadn't, hit in over a year. So it does feel good when it goes right on the day. I think that's kind of the allure to that kind of thing. Kind of like with football.
Yeah,
when it pays off, that like short little burst of when it pays off is worth the months of build up.
And I think that's where the dedication and the psychology part of it comes in. It's definitely the part where I just get hooked on is like, okay, you can go for crazy stuff in the game, but as long as you're training but in the backyard with it, then you're good to go. Now events, talking about events, here at Deadly Choices, we've been lucky enough to have a few events this year that we've enjoyed getting back out. But for you, Brandon, what's been your most memorable event for 2021, apart from the Olympics, of course?
In terms of DC events, I'd say my last week's been pretty good. It's been, I don't know if nostalgia is the right word or a bit of a throwback. So we went to the Little Deadlies Olympic Day Out last week. So that kind of took me back to my first DC event. So we had a similar one, but for the Commonwealth Games. So that was my first event with DC. So it was good to go back, obviously now partnered with the Olympics, to go interact with the community and all the young ones. And then leading into the next week, I've got to go back to my old high school for NAIDOC. So I help hand out the sports awards there on the stage.
Oh my goodness, it's my 10 years since it's reunion. I don't even like to say it, but going back to high school, what was that like, Brandon?
There's like four times as many kids there. I could not believe it. Going to that assembly, wow. There was thousands of them.
I know. I feel like my younger siblings go to my high school that I went to, and so people I went to school with are like their teacher. And it's, I think they think they can get away with a bit more, but I'm like, hey, I haven't seen my friends since high school, so you can't, but, you've got to behave yourself. But, going back and telling your story and how you found or how weightlifting kind of found you, what are some of the reactions you get from the kids? Are they curious or, what's that like to even tell your story to the next generation there?
Yeah, I do like going back to, say, that high school age because I didn't start my sport until well after high school, years after high school. So I like to share that, what you're doing in high school, if you're, say, achieving big things or if you're just falling short, that it's not the be-all and end-all at such a young age. I guess when you're that young, you can't see that far forward. Mm-hmm. So for me, I've been through that. I was just on the cusp of being a successful athlete in school in many sports. I just made the regional state level in a few different sports. So to finally hit the mark well after high school and share that with those that might be struggling, I feel like that's pretty important at a young age.
Yeah, it's like in high school you think that that's the rest of your life, right? But it's only just getting started. I have a cousin, shout out to my cousin Soph up north, graduating, but it's so exciting to let them know that you've got many opportunities to change the direction of your life and where you want to go in your career, as well as your sports. There's heaps of, and to see women's rugby league coming through, there's women in their late late 20s as well as early 30s getting picked for the first time in a sport that they've played for years and years. So, you know, it's exciting to see that there's still so many opportunities, even obviously after high school. But it's funny, you feel like if you're not getting picked for your rep sports throughout, you know, your early years of 13, 14, that you're going to miss the boat. But, you know, you completely jumped ships there, haven't you, Brandon? And it's, you know, you're at the Olympics. So it worked out pretty well for you.
Yeah. It's definitely a good perspective to share. I remember when I was in high school, I thought that was it. If I wasn't making teams back then what's the point when I get out of school? But obviously hindsight is a beautiful thing. So it was good to share my perspective with those kids. And another event I went a few days later to was my old university. So I got to speak with the Murray School there that came from school to do a few university activities there. And then I got to share my perspective beyond sport on the importance of, you know, getting educated as well, because being an athlete is such a small little slice of your life. Yeah. So it's important to share that, you know, you can do these things in sport, but you can also study and then look forward past that. I feel like that's another perspective that, I like to share.
Absolutely. I mean, I was 12, I wanted to be a netball player. Unfortunately, I stopped growing at the age of 12, so that was off the cards. But like you said, there's so many, but also just in education, no one really can take that from you. And it's definitely helped me within my sports too, just challenging myself, my brain capacity of thinking, you know, that there's more than one solution, and just kind of how I work in a team as well has really changed. So there's so much you can get from whether it be, you know, university or TAFE or any kind of study, apprentice, whatever, definitely find ways to challenge your mind that way. But Brandon, is there anything in the future, near future, that you're looking forward to, or anything next year that you're looking forward to within Deadly Choices?
I guess it depends what comes up. I got a bub on the way 11th of November, so I'll be taking a bit of leave.
Yeah, you'll be very busy, won't you, for Christmas? Yeah, I will be busy.
Yep. And then I guess we'll see what comes about early next year. Obviously, I'll have the Commonwealth Games, so I'll be pretty heavily in training as well. Hopefully we can get out and about a bit more in community.
Yeah, for sure.
Obviously, COVID over these last couple of years have made things a bit harder in terms of community engagement. So hopefully we can open things up a bit more, and then build that, you know, sense of community again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, borders are opening, and I think the next step for Mob is to step up and get the jab, so that when the borders do eventually open, that we're able to enjoy them and not have to go into lockdown again, or not have to see any of our community be sick or lose anyone. So it's so important that leading up into this Christmas time, you know, we've got vulnerable people, we've got elders, our bubs, those whose health isn't wouldn't survive COVID. So it's so important that we step up. Make sure you head to our Deadly Choices page and our Facebook page, our website there, to check out if there's any I Stepped Up events near you. But the best time to step up is right now, leading into Christmas and into I believe it's December the 17th. So it's so important that we start to do what's right now and make sure that we prevent going into any kind of lockdown or situation that we saw happen with Melbourne and Canberra and Sydney as well. So it's so important that we do that. But Nat and Brandon, Nat, what's your plans for, the break? And even, you know, is there any kind of deadly choices that you're making right now in your life to, I guess, mix it up?
Yeah, I think I'm looking forward to having a couple of weeks off over Christmas, and my family are coming down to visit, so that will be really nice. My deadly choice, I'm really trying to eat at least 3 pieces of fruit every day.
Yep.
And mangoes are in season, so that's making it so much easier.
My favorite fruit, mango. Nan used to have a big mango tree in the backyard, and I definitely miss that. Every time I go to the shop, I'm like, $5? What? I just want to go to Nan's backyard and pluck a few. But you're right. But we had National Nutrition Week the other week, and they said only 7% of adults eat the right intake of vegetables weekly or daily, which I just thought is crazy. So I'm on that track, but it's trying to get veggies in as much as I can. But also it's getting hot too, so those salads are definitely coming through. I am the salad queen at home. I burn most of everything else, so salads I can handle. But Brandon, what is your deadly choice that, apart from prepping for being a new dad and bub on the way, what are the deadly choices that you're making right now?
I would say drinking water. As you said, it's getting hot. I woke up the other day and it was already 30 degrees. I think, was it 2 days ago? You got well into the 30s.
It's stinking hot. Nat, we're from North Queensland. Is this not resembling like the mugginess? It's just a weird, I'm like, oh my God, I ran away from this.
Yeah, it feels like home, definitely.
It definitely does.
Yeah, so now that it's starting to pick up again and then head into summer, I think making sure that you're hydrated is going to, go a long way.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, it's funny how much water actually has the impact on the rest of your body and your organs. And I know I just feel, someone always told me, if you don't have enough water, you might as well be a dried up fruit. And I was like, oh, man, I just picture myself as dried up fruit. So I'm like, no, I'm going to drink that water. So, yeah, just for the mob listening, remember, you know, you're tuning in to 98.9 FM on Deadly Choices Radio Show here. Drink your water and eat your fruit and veggies because it's the best time right now. And I always think that October, November, because, you know, December's the festive season. Mm. You're having a bit more fun than usual. So, yeah, I try to, like, prep and, you know, start my F45 challenge soon. So, yeah, it's these months are all about prepping for the celebratory December month. But thank you both for coming on today. I really appreciate it. And, you know, in honor of OT Week, make sure you check it out and you check out what the importance they're talking about there and, you know, just the essentials of independence, participation and inclusion. But Nat, thank you so much for coming on and I'm sure we'll get you on soon again to have a yarn about OT and what you guys do over there.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Shanae.
Yeah. And Brandon, thank you. I'm sure I'll see you around regularly, considering work in the same team. But, keep training hard and I'm sure we'll get you back on soon and we'll probably have more to yarn about your prep for the Comm Games.
That sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
All right, everyone. I'm here joined on the phone with Dr. Jonathan from Brisbane ATSIC. Dr. Jonathan, how you going?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Shanae. How are you?
Good, good. I'm counting down the days to till Christmas and to the holiday break. I don't know if everyone else is, but yeah, it's I'm excited to get a bit of a break. Is there anything coming up that I guess you're looking forward to?
I've got the long weekend, so I've taken an extra day tomorrow, so going away for the weekend up to Tambourine, so that's gonna be good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I forgot that there was a long weekend this weekend, but definitely gonna enjoy that, I think. But now, you know, obviously Wednesday night, so there's been a few cases around the community. Can you give me a little update on where we're at with COVID?
Yeah, sure. So we did have, last week we had a case of someone on the Gold Coast out and about for over a week and ended up in hospital quite unwell, bloke. But no, sort of doesn't seem like any further cases from that. And then on Tuesday this week, we've had some more cases, variety of someone in home quarantine. So probably pretty low risk because that's pretty well managed. Someone else, a younger person who's a close contact of someone positive in New South Wales, has come up. So I guess kind of monitoring those and want to, you know, make sure everyone gets tested and kind of looks at those contact tracing locations on the Queensland Health website. And, you know, kind of if you've got any symptoms in southeast Queensland, go and get yourself tested.
Absolutely. It's, you know, the weather's changing. It's getting a bit hot. So everyone's getting out and about. And, you know, like I said, the holiday break's coming up soon. We do also have our border restrictions deadlines in the such of, you know, mid-December. So right now is the time to get vaccinated, to be ready for when borders open. You know, Dr. Jonathan, can you tell me what our clinics are doing right now to make sure that our community, especially our First Nations community, getting vaccinated so that we do we are protected for when these borders do get open?
Sure. And I'll say that we are a bit concerned because of the vaccination rates being a bit lower for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people across the state, but particularly in southeast Queensland here, there's some particular areas that where it's especially low, like Logan. So we really are kind of ready to vaccinate. We've got all of our clinics are able to vaccinate. We've got the respiratory clinics who are doing it as well. And we can certainly do more sort of when we need to. We can get plenty of vaccine these days. There's not really a supply issue. And we can get more from Queensland Health or the federal government. So there's lots of supply of that and we're ready to go, really. We've done a few set up locations where we go and do some outreach or at our clinics have a special day, and we can do more of those if we need to as well. Going to some schools, doing some of that stuff, obviously with parent consent and all of that for vaccination.
Yeah, I know a lot of our clinics are really batten down the hatches right now just in preparation for these borders opening. On Deadly Choices, you know, we've had our CEO, Adrian Carson, address, I guess, the media and our community around what potentially could happen last week, you know, and happen, I guess, before Christmas, around Christmas, and particularly in the new year next year, with for our community, if we're not vaccinated, and you know, being vulnerable, you know, a doctor in our clinics, you see this day in, day out, Dr. Jonathan, just can you give us a bit of an insight of the catastrophe that could really happen in our community if it comes through, well, when Delta comes and we're not ready for it?
Yeah, sure. And I guess I can talk to some of the modelling that we had done specifically for Southeast Queensland, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So I don't think that's been done necessarily anywhere in the country, but certainly not in Queensland. And it's for community. It's not for government. It's to sort of talk to community about. And, you know, what it shows is if we don't really do anything from here and don't improve rates as they're going, there'll be, you know, 60,000 plus cases to 3,500 admissions to hospital and about 460 deaths of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Southeast Queensland. That's not the whole of Queensland. And, you know, those are big numbers, and it's something we can do something about. I guess my message probably to everyone is once COVID starts coming in, which it will, and everyone knows that now, I think, if you're not vaccinated, your chances of getting COVID are pretty close to 100% probably over the next, you know, 9 to 12 months, probably more so in the first 6 months. So I guess you've got to be prepared for that. And even if you are vaccinated, you might get COVID too. But the thing is that you'll get a much lighter version of it. It'll be more like a common cold.
Yeah.
And you won't be as likely to pass it on to other people. So that's all, I guess, the strong message is, you know, and there's the time off work that you have to deal with.
Family,
all of that.
Time off work, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we've had conversations as well with Mob in Broken Hill and Will Kenya, and seeing their whole family get sick. Obviously, through isolation, you know, they can't reach out for physical help. A lot of the help became around just the calling each other and the emotional support, but the whole family's sick, you know what I mean? So I always think, wow, like what do we do when our whole community, our whole family's sick, and we're all just, I guess, putting so much extra pressure on our health systems that already, you know, within our First Nations community throughout Australia, we already have such a gap to close, and this can just create such a huge a distance between where we are and where we need to be as healthy people in a healthy community.
Yeah, and that's something that we're thinking about as well, as you know, aside from vaccines and all that, how is COVID going to impact us? And from a health service point of view, but from community and families' point of view, and something that we're probably keen to start having some conversations with people about is, you know, just a bit of preparation, thinking through what it might look like. If someone in your family, in your household got COVID, was it maybe in hospital, maybe not, you know, you're all needing to isolate, quarantine, how are you going to get supplies, what's going to happen with the kids and their, you know, schooling, and are there stresses that you kind of might blow up a bit, that kind of thing, and just trying to get people to think ahead. No, I don't want to stress people out, but, you know, preparation can really help, you know, get us through this time. Who are you going to kind of lean on in this time? Who might need to lean on you too? You know, think through that. What are the other families around you that might need your support?
You know, and for the mob who just tuned in, I'm here talking to Dr. Jonathan from the Brisbane ATSIC service here in Brisbane and in the Woolloongabba area as well. So, you know, Dr. Jonathan, the vaccine, we've been talking about it, you know, for quite some time now. It's so important that I think the conversation's always had, but right now is definitely the time to step up. So there's also so much information, and every case is different. So, you know, we've definitely had conversations with the doctors of why are we so – like, I've always been far more scared of the disease than I am of any kind of cure that has been created for it, even though, you know, we have the vaccine going out by the millions these days throughout the world. So I guess, you know, Dr. Jonathan, tell us a little bit more around, I guess, why it's important that we step up right now, and why we as individuals really – I guess, do our research and what that looks like on the vaccine.
Yeah. And so I think you're right. It's really important to, when you're weighing up any sort of treatment, is the risk and benefits. And I think first you've got to start with what's the infection like, the COVID infection. If I get sick with that, what could that look like? And no one's got a crystal ball for each individual, but we know as people get a bit older, if they've got health conditions, they're a bit more at risk. But even young, healthy people in their 20s and 30s are at risk as well. Teenagers too, have ended up in hospital and ICU with COVID. So I think you've got to start with that point. What's the chances of that? And the long COVID, 1 in 10 people maybe can get long-term symptoms from COVID. If you've got sort of immune issues or other health issues. I know people have talked to me about, I'm worried about the vaccine because I've got other health issues. Think about what COVID might do to your body as well, the infection itself. And I guess start there because that's kind of where you need to. And the vaccine, yes, it can have some side effects, but the serious ones are rare. But side effects from the actual infection are much more common, serious ones.
Yeah, absolutely. And, as First Nations people, we got to remember that it's not about the government and it's not about, the politics behind the vaccine. And, I was doing a bit of reading earlier this week, just seeing the limited access to the actual vaccine in third world countries. And here we are, as well as the devastation that took place, not in our historical context as well, but like just previously in those small communities and how, before this year, before we didn't have the vaccine, just the devastation throughout the world. So it's important that we really make sure we are grateful, for this actual opportunity to prevent the spread and prevent the worst case scenario. Before I let you go, Dr. Jonathan, is there any kind of last words that, or, advice that you can really give to somebody who hasn't been vaccinated, First Nation mob, who definitely know that Delta is on its way and that we really got to do what we can to avoid the worst case scenario?
Yeah, look, I think the main message is don't delay any longer. When the border will open in mid-December, regardless of what rates are aware in terms of vaccines. So you've got, 5 or 6 weeks to get the vaccine in and get it working. And if you've got worries, sort of fearful of it or any stress about it, come and talk to someone, come and talk to one of the GPs at one of our clinics across Southeast Queensland, and they're more than happy to have a conversation about it. They've done lots of them, they know a lot about it, share what's worrying you and talk it through. You don't have to go ahead with the jab at that point, but just have a conversation. I think don't stick your head in the sand. This is going to happen. You can't just because you don't think about it, it doesn't make it not happen. And I think that we've got to kind of face that reality.
Yeah, it's been. It's that out of sight, out of mind sort of mentality, but it seems like those who've been affected the most, they're the ones who really understand the importance of the jab and the importance of doing whatever you can right now to really protect yourself, the community, and this is the best way out, realistically. It's funny, people have said to me like, oh, it hasn't been tested enough. And it's, I've talked to doctors and I said, I always sit down with my brother and my sisters and I say, hey, the whole world stopped. All of our doctors, they did look after, our people, but they definitely, the whole world really stopped to rally around COVID-19 and the vaccine and to get us out of this. So, and to say that it's not tested enough or I feel like it's not, it'd be a bit disheartening for our doctors and those who have been on the front line and those who have been really in the midst of everything, the testing, the cure, the way out, would be a bit disheartened by those things because, you yourself as a doctor, Dr. Jonathan, obviously, our doctors, our nurses, our front lines have put in enormous amount of work in the last 2 years.
For sure. And, that's ongoing, isn't it? And in the hospitals, I think, It must be. I don't work in the hospitals, but it must be devastating to see patients who are really sick in ICU and dying from a vaccine preventable disease that can turn it into a common cold. In the vast majority of cases. So, I think you're right. It's short development, but there's been a lot of energy and effort, and there's literally billions of doses given worldwide now, and we're past the 12-month mark from when the first doses were given in those first studies and given to hundreds of millions of people, billions around the world. So there's that kind of safety experience after they've been released for a long time.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Dr. Jonathan, for coming on and have a yarn. I'm sure we'll talk to you very shortly. But yeah, keep safe, and we'll definitely stay out there encouraging mob to step up, take the jab and do the right thing by themselves and their community.
Yeah. Thanks, Sinead.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.
All right, you mob, that was Dr. Jonathan from the Brisbane ATSIC's service there, and it's so important that we keep talking about this, because I know, like Dr. Jonathan did say, you know, we tend to bury our heads in the sand sometimes when we don't want to hear what we want to hear, or we're a bit scared about what, you know, what's coming up. So remember to get your health advice from the Queensland website. You can also go to Deadly Choices Facebook page, as well as the campaign we're running, the I Stepped Up website. So check if there's any events heading to you, heading out near your place soon. But for those who are just tuned in, this is 98.9 FM for the best country, and this is the Deadly Choices radio show. We've had a lovely yarn to Nat, one of our occupational therapists for OT Week, as well as Brandon Wakeling, you know, just reflecting on the Olympics and Commonwealth Games coming up as well. So as well, he was talking about all of our Deadly Choices events. Now, remember, to be involved in any of our Deadly Choices events, you have to be up to date with your 715 health check. I talk about it all the time. You know, you can get your 2021 Deadly Choices shirt before the year finished, so that next year you can get another 2022 shirt. Oh my God, I can't believe it's 2022 next year. Plus, you know what? Tune into our Deadly Choices Facebook pages. There's heaps of weekly live sessions there that we've posted throughout the last couple of years, particularly in isolation. You know, Good Quick Tucker, podcasts, yarns, Deadly Kindies, DC Fit, and so much more. But if you, you know, DC Fit is a good one, because I've had a look at a few of those. I mean, like I said, it's about preparing for the festive season here in October, November. So you got another month. I know I'm definitely getting ready for the festive season and making sure that we get summer ready as well. But in order to enjoy summer, we have to be doing the right thing by community. So respiratory testing clinics, they're still open in Southeast Queensland. So if you're experiencing any COVID-19 symptoms, no matter how mild, give your local clinic a call, book a test. You can find where your nearest clinic is on our website, www.deadlychoices.com.au. But you mob, you know, that's it from me today for tonight, and you know, stay safe. I know I'm double vaxxed, and it makes me sleep a bit easier at night knowing I can protect people like my grandmother, my grandparents, the vulnerable, you know, bubs are being born left, right and center. So it's so important that we do the right thing by them, by ourselves as well, and the long-term effects that could potentially have from COVID is more unknown and far more scarier to me than any vaccine that I know that I've done my research about. So yeah, it's so important that we head to our doctors, have a yarn with them, put your mind at ease, and do the right thing by not just yourself but everyone in the community. It's so important. And you know, from what I've read, there is millions, billions of people in this world who've stepped up for the jab. So it's so important that we definitely think about that and think about our future. So as well as we have the QUT Netball registrations open Thursday the 16th and Friday. Oh, well, the games are on Thursday the 16th, sorry, and Friday the 17th of December. So that's the QUT Netball registrations are open for juniors, cadets and opens. So head to our website, www.deadlychoices.com.au. That was our website. So yeah, make sure you get running with a bit of netty. I miss my netball. My ligaments and my ankles still hurt from netball. But yeah, it's always good fun time to be out with the sisters all over again. But that's me for tonight, you mob. And until next week, you know, you can catch us the same place, 98.9 FM, Wednesday nights. Until then, keep making those deadly choices.
Deadly Choices Radio. A show encouraging mob to make healthy choices, from stop smoking, eating good food, exercising daily, and getting a health check for themselves and their family. Featuring Deadly Choices ambassadors, the Healthy Lifestyle Mob, and many more. So tune in to Deadly Choices after 6 p.m. each Wednesday and on demand at 98.9fm.com.au.